You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Disease du Jour podcast. I'm your host, Carly Sisson. In this episode, I was joined by Dr. Beau Rainbow to talk about equine periodontal disease. This episode of Disease du Jour is brought to you by Bimeda. Dr. Rainbow is from Ocala, Florida, where he grew up on a commercial thoroughbred farm. Following graduation from Davidson College, he was accepted into the prestigious Darley Flying Start program to study the thoroughbred industry around the world for 2 years. During this time, he knew that veterinary medicine would be his calling, and he was accepted into the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. After graduation in 2012, he worked for the Haggard Equine Medicine Institute and then did stints in Western Australia and Texas before returning to the bluegrass. He is an owner of Kentucky Equine Dental Specialists in Versailles, Kentucky. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Rainbow.
Thank you.
To get us started, can you just give us a brief overview of periodontal disease for any of our listeners who don't currently do a lot of dental work?
Sure. Periodontal disease, I mean, just similarly to people, horses can get gaps in between their teeth. And so any horses, you should never be able to actually have a gap between their teeth and really to almost floss like people need to floss. So anytime we've got periodontal disease, we're seeing the gums, the gingiva are getting recessed. We're seeing the periodontal ligament is beginning to fail because of sort of inflammation, and we're getting an overgrowth of bacteria in that area that's just causing the ligament and the normal healthy gingiva to become diseased and weakened. So it's an extraordinarily common disease in horses. Published reports have shown between 40 and 80% of horses have it. And it's a cumulative dental disease. So as horses get older, you're going to see more and more likelihood of it. The teeth, as horses get older, get narrower once they start getting into their upper teens. And also, if there's been a malocclusion, anywhere where a tooth is maybe beginning to rotate a little bit and that hasn't been managed appropriately, then that will end up basically creating an area, a gap between teeth, that then if you get a little bit of feed trapped in it, then you get that feed stagnation. You end up with anaerobic bacteria getting into the feed, that stagnated feed, and then that weakens the periodontal ligament a little bit more and causing some inflammation, and it's painful. And then it sort of keeps cycling. It's a vicious cycle because then the periodontal ligament loosens more, and then sometimes adjacent teeth begin to have weakened periodontal ligaments and more periodontal disease. And so we'll get adjacent gaps all the way down an arcade sometimes, or on an opposing arcade even. So anytime we get these teeth loosening up just a little bit, it begins to open Pandora's box a little bit, and it's hard to put it back. But we do have some ways of treating it as well, if we can catch it. But it's an extraordinarily common disease, and non-veterinarians aren't licensed to really treat it or diagnose it or even perform an oral exam. So it's really best treated, diagnosed, and treated by a veterinarian.
Right. What age of horse do you typically see it in? Like, when should veterinarians start to be concerned about it in their senior patients?
Honestly, I see it in all ages. I've had yearlings with periodontal disease now, but it is going to be more and more common the older you get. But we've been forced to extract teeth in young horses as young as 5 and 6 years old because of periodontal disease that has been unchecked and is severe enough that it's better to extract the tooth than to leave it due to the tooth's malocclusion or something like that, that we need to try to extract the tooth. So I mean that you can reach the most severe levels of periodontal disease in very young horses. So any time that you encounter feed trapped between teeth, that is periodontal disease and doesn't need to be glazed over. It needs to be noted on a dental chart. It needs to be assessed with a periodontal probe. and it needs to be flushed and treated if that's sort of what it's, what the severity requires that. So there needs to be some sort of treatment in it, plan enacted.
Right. So what are some common signs that owners might notice that would prompt a call to their veterinarian? And then what are some of the more subtle findings that a veterinarian might notice on an oral exam?
So typically what happens is, you know, most of the time it's an older horse. Generally, you know, probably 80 to 90% of the time, it's a horse that's over 15, 16, 17, that's beginning to have some problems. And they'll say, you know, the horse just doesn't eat well. It's dropping more grain. Its mouth seems to smell a little funny. You know, sometimes I think owners will stick their fingers up the mouth. They'll be kind of brave. And they'll say, my finger really smelled terrible. It didn't smell like chewed up sweet hay or sweet grain. It smelled more foul and malodorous. And so some smell is a big thing, leaving feed, avoiding hay. You know, people will say, my horse eats the grain, but it won't touch the hay. That's a pretty good clue to me that this horse might have some periodontal disease. In a horse that's quitting, that's certainly something. It could be due to periodontal disease. It could be due to just expiring older teeth, but that's another reason. And there's some horses that are more likely to have periodontal disease because of the shape to their head. So for example, miniature horses, they're more likely to have malocclusions because their teeth don't shrink as much as their head does. So they're going to have more malocclusions, ergo they're going to have more periodontal disease. Same thing with the dished-faced breeds. Those oftentimes have more malocclusions and more periodontal disease that gets associated with it. And as far as veterinarians going, you know, I think once you've got that mouth rinsed out well before you put the speculum on the horse, I oftentimes in my oral exam will reach in with my hand and just sort of feel the topography of the arcades. And if I come out with, you know, I felt loose teeth or I felt something that's really tall or my hand just comes out with a smell, those are pretty big clues that I'm probably going to find some degree of periodontal disease. Because a tall tooth is obviously going to be packing food somewhere and it's going to be acting as a lever. So it might be packing feed right around itself, or it might be packing feed into an opposing arcade. A loose tooth, that tooth loosens somehow, likely due to periodontal disease. And those teeth, if they can wiggle around, they're going to get feed trapped in them. And obviously if your hand smells, you're probably touching some stagnant feed that's trapped in there. And if once you put your mirror in, and do a thorough mirror exam, if you've already rinsed the mouth out really well and you're still finding feed stuck between teeth, there's going to be some degree of periodontal disease associated. And so we're looking for diastemas and we're always calling out, you know, if there's feed, is it a diastema that's narrow or wide? And is the diastema open or valve? And that way that describes the shape of the gap between the teeth to let us know perhaps what technique we might need to remedy the periodontal disease. How can we make this gap not trap feed and not further the periodontal disease that's associated with it?
Okay. This podcast is brought to you by Bimeda, the manufacturer of GastroBim. GastroBim, omeprazole, is the first and only FDA-approved bioequivalent to GastroGuard. Give your horse a scientifically proven, apple-flavored solution for gastric ulcers. Because equine gastric ulcer syndrome is complex, always work with your veterinarian for proper diagnosis and care. Same trusted treatment, less cost. That's GastroBim. The safety of GastroBim paste has not been determined in pregnant or lactating mares. For use in horses and foals 4 weeks of age and older. As you start to go through your diagnostic workup, do you often use advanced imaging? Is that necessary in every case or only in specific cases?
So really, the periodontal disease is something that's very easy to diagnose in the field and treat in the field generally. So to make that good diagnosis, a mirror exam is an excellent way. And then you've got, everybody should have a periodontal probe on their truck, and they've got graduated lines, and some of the lines are at millimeter, 2 millimeter, 3 millimeter marks, and others have different markings on them, but you should know what they correspond to. And taking that probe and sinking it down, not dragging it along the gingiva, but sinking it down periodically, and especially in those areas of interest that appear to be diseased, and noting how deep the periodontal ligament before your periodontal probe stops sliding down or up. So it should be 3 millimeters or less. If you're getting it to sink a lot more than that, you have periodontal disease. The periodontal ligament has been disrupted, and ergo the tooth is likely to be looser. So that's a great way of doing it. Now, you can also look and see how much bone has been resorbed between the teeth or been impacted by periodontal disease by taking radiographs. And oblique open mouth radiographs are very important. So for a brief sort of side note for taking these radiographs, for example, in mandibular teeth, we want to take a dorsal to ventral oblique through an open mouth. And I always tell people, if you're going to send me radiographs, I've told people it needs to be, you know, open mouthed. They need to be not have a halter on, and they need not have motion. And I don't know whether this will be kept or not, but we've had to change that to the horses need to be drunk, as in sedate. They need to have an open mouth, and they need to be naked, no halters, because inevitably there is a problem getting high quality radiographs that are actually diagnostic for us to be able to help veterinarians out. But drunk, naked, and open mouth seems to work for getting people to remember that. But if we do on a mandibular teeth, we get a dorsal ventral oblique that you can see between the teeth by taking the tail of the generator towards the tail of the horse a little bit. We can see all those gaps and separate those teeth individually and see what it looks like between there. And when you're doing a maxillary teeth, we'll take a ventral to dorsal oblique, and we can see how much tooth resorption. And we can categorize that as well, grading 1 through 4 to note what those are, corresponding with 25, 50, 75, and 100% tooth resorption or bone resorption between the teeth. So that's how we look at that. Now, interestingly, we've also had horses referred to us after having scintigraphy. So there's been or bridle lameness or difficulty that the rider's never been able to figure out. The horse is going for scintigraphy, and lo and behold, a particular arcade or an area of the arcade might light up on scintigraphy. Oh, and wow. So we've been asked to do secondary, you know, come in and do a, you know, why is this lighting up? And we'll do an oral exam, and oftentimes we'll find periodontal disease, and we'll confirm it with radiographs. We'll rule out any other cause of that, of the signal being there from scintigraphy. And horses are, you know, we've sent a couple of these horses back, and everybody goes, well, that appears to be it. The bridle lameness is gone. And diagnosing it with scintigraphy is a little bit overkill, but you know, a lot of people don't realize how severe periodontal disease can be in horses, and how much it can impact a horse in the bridle and its quality of life. So it's really something that every veterinarian who is out floating teeth should be performing and documenting an oral exam, and should also be treating the periodontal disease that they encounter, or at least referring it to somebody for treatment if they don't want to go through the treatment protocols that we might talk about next.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about how you approach grading severity and then how you approach treatment for each of those stages of severity?
Sure. When we're looking at trying to figure out how severe is it, certainly looking at how deep does a periodontal probe sink next to an adjacent or an affected tooth is one thing that's important. And also thinking about how tall or long overall is that tooth. So, you know, if you bury a periodontal probe 10 millimeters, but the tooth is 40 millimeters long, that's something that hopefully you can treat, you know, extraction is a long way away. However, if you're burying a periodontal probe 10 millimeters and the tooth is only 15 millimeters long, then you know that this tooth is probably more mobile, is more likely moving in the socket, packing more feed, and this could be a more severe prognosis. So thinking about how deep does the probe go, how mobile is the tooth, and we rate mobility in our practice grade 1 through 3. Grade 1, the teeth move left and right, medial and lateral. Grade 2, the teeth move mesial and distal, so forwards and backwards. And grade 3, the teeth move up and down in the socket. So if we get a grade 3 tooth, that's a pretty severe, not likely to be vital tooth that's probably extracted and left in, because if it's that mobile, the periodontal ligament has been effectively destroyed, and that tooth is never really going to have a secure anchor into that horse's arcade. And so it's always going to want to trap feed, and we don't want it to affect the adjacent teeth. So we feel that those teeth are oftentimes better off extracted. So looking at how depth it probes, how much mobility it is, and then also assessing the teeth with open mouth oblique radiographs so that we know how long the crown is to help us make those decisions. Is this a tooth that's going to be viable or not viable? And once we've made that decision, you know, and sometimes we don't have to necessarily take radiographs. We know it's a young horse. We know that it doesn't probe very deeply. We'll start off for us, our basic sort of way of assessing or treating periodontal disease is to clean it out first and foremost. So on all of our trucks, we're a dental only practice. We just have a periodontal flushing unit that puts high pressure water through pump from a bucket, and we can place that tip between teeth and we will flush it out under high water pressure and do everything to get that forage out. And we just have to keep rechecking it with a mirror, because sometimes you think you get lots of forage will come flushing out. You think, oh, I got it all. And you look back with a mirror and you discover it's still deeper. It's still deeper. It's still deeper. So we'll flush. Oftentimes we end up incorporating some periodontal probes, some really narrow tipped ones. Sometimes we need some fatter tipped ones. Sometimes we need some long, skinny ones to try to fit between the teeth and remove all that forage, because sometimes water alone just can't get these. Other options is we can use these small K files. They're pretty aggressive and definitely try to get that forage out of there. Once we've got the forage out, we need to think about, is this, depending on the depth of it, is this a tooth? Do we need to perform some odontoplasty to take this space, this diastema, out of occlusion? So we might end up floating not only the 108, 109 diastema, but we might need to float even a bit more of the 408, 409, just to take that area of the mouth out of occlusion for a little while. So that's one thing we can do. If the diastemas are deep enough, our also sort of first line of defense is to pack them with metronidazole tablets. So we'll keep some 250 and 500 milligram metronidazole tablets. We'll break those down with a razor, some rongeurs, and we'll end up packing that area with a lot of metronidazole, because that's typically had a lot of stagnated feed, anaerobic infection. And so that will, metronidazole will be pretty helpful with that. There's a lot of other periaceuticals that are a little bit more expensive, things like DoxyRobe. We've put CleanseGuard in these things before, trying to get them to heal down. So I want to use something, especially any diastema that's bleeding from periodontal disease, I'm going to put some sort of medicant or periaceutical into this diastemas. Now, if I've treated this horse and I've rechecked it more frequently, for example, some of them might be every 3 months, some of them might be 6 months, and I'm still finding that these are bleeding diastemas that are not wanting to heal, the other thing we can do is we can put them on a, change their diet a little bit. We can offer pre-chewed food by having them no longer on hay, but typically hay pellets would be the best. Hay cubes would sort of be a second best in senior feeds. We don't want to get any cracked corn or whole oats or hay stems getting shoved into these diastemas and creating periodontal disease again. So giving them something that's more super oatmeal consistency and pre-chewed is going to help with that. And we do that, doesn't matter whether the horse is young or old, we'll do that with them. These horses can still graze, in my opinion. If the grass is green and vibrant, I have no problem with them grazing, because what the grass is going to have a high enough water content that it's not going to get stuffed into these gaps. Hay, on the other hand, where it's dried out, will oftentimes get really well stuck in there and be difficult to remove. So nutrition changes, flushing, odontoplasty, metronidazole, periaceuticals. If that doesn't work, then we need to start thinking about diastema widenings or occlusal relief cuts. So we use some diamond, thin diamond burrs, and we can actually, it seems counterintuitive to some degree, but we might do a diastema widening. And so we'll open a small narrow valve, might all of a sudden be a wide open valve. We have to be careful not to touch the adjacent pulps of the teeth, because we don't want to damage those. We only want to remove the cementum and maybe some of the enamel between the teeth. But we want to make it so that forage can, if it's going to get stuck, it can also be pulled out. And so some owners report that their horses will sit there and play around with their tongue in their mouth, and they can, it seems like they're trying to dig something up with their tongue. Well, they are, And if we make the gap a little bit wider, hopefully that forage will then actually can be moved out of those diastemata. Now, if we can't get the diastema widened, or it's so wide and it still seems to be a problem, we do occasionally put some vinyl polysiloxone in there, or some wax or something like that. I don't love vinyl polysiloxane. Technically, it is not very helpful for your periodontal lumen. It's toxic to it. But I have had cases where it has healed underneath it and bought some time, which is good, and then pulled them out. I've also had some cases where it's been pushed in there and it has been driven further and further deeper, and it's actually served as more like a foreign body. So I prefer, if I'm going to put anything in there, because all of my other previous attempts have not worked, or the owner won't feed, has to keep the horse on hay or something like that. I have put some wax in there. I prefer that. But if the horse is going to be out on a round bale and they're never going to be able to create the diet change that the horse needs, then perhaps VPS is the next option. The other option, of course, is if the disease has gotten severe enough, is extraction. If we extract the tooth, there are no longer a diastema adjacent to the tooth. There's now this larger gap, and it's just an extraction socket site. So that is an option. Occasionally, that leads to sort of the dominoes falling with adjacent teeth, but that's an option for us. I get asked occasionally about putting horses on systemic antibiotics or non-steroidals long-term for it. I really think we have to treat our mechanical problem. And if we're not going to treat the mechanical problem, I don't think we're going to have any success with systemic antibiotics or anti-inflammatories.
Right. When you mention dietary changes, is that a permanent lifelong change, or is that just helping the horse through this early stage of treatment?
It really depends on the teeth. Now, sometimes it is a temporary change. The horse is young. Horses are hypsodont, so they're going to erupt more teeth out. And as they erupt that reserve crown out into the mouth, they're going to bring with it, hopefully, healthy periodontal ligament that's somewhere down there. The other thing is, with appropriate odontoplasty, a tooth that's maybe more rotated is going to be corrected. So they can certainly be temporary. It might only be for 6-8 weeks or something like that until we can get the horse to have a healthier mouth. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 years and then they're off of it for a while. So it can certainly be temporary. I don't want to commit everybody to lifelong if you're going to have to feed your horse mush,
your
5-year-old horse mush for the rest of its life. Sometimes it is just temporary because, they're going to erupt a more healthy periodontal ligament and tooth in time.
What other long-term management strategies are typically required, and how often do you want to see the horse and follow-up appointments?
So it really depends on the severity of the disease, thinking about like how loose are the teeth, how old are the teeth, how deep is it probing. A lot of horses I see back in 6 months. Now, if I've got horses that are incredibly clinical, they're losing weight because of this, they're clearly unhappy, I might see them back in 6 weeks and see what kind of changes we've been able to get. And it's just involving another oral exam. So we'll typically try to push them back, see them in 6 months at the very latest, but occasionally we'll see them shorter intervals to try to flush some of these big diastemas out, make sure that they're staying clean and that nothing is getting too stagnant in there. And most of the time, if owners can feed mush, pre-chewed food, the hay pellets, the senior feeds, keep them out on grass all the time, then those horses will oftentimes, they'll heal quite a bit. So they may never, if I can get those diastemas to granulate in a little bit and not be bloody and raw, then oftentimes I'm not saying that we need to see the horse. I'm not saying it can go back out on hay all the time necessarily, but at least at that point, I'm happy seeing it in 6 months. So it just needs a little bit of time.
Right. What is the overall recurrence risk? I'm sure that kind of depends on the age of the horse and the severity of the disease, but do these horses tend to do fairly well after you treat them?
I feel like we're always managing it to some degree. Okay. I don't know that it's always an outright win, but we'll definitely see the older horses, they just have less reserve crown to work with.
Right.
And so I don't know that we ever perfectly heal them. Now, they might get to a point where they're not bleeding in the gums and stuff like that. They'll be trapping a little bit of feed, but it'll be temporary, even though they're still eating hay, and we'll always be watching it. You know, the kind of horse that you go do its oral exam, and it doesn't take much with a periodontal unit to flush out the feed that's stuck in there, and we don't see any bleeding diastemas. So, you know, those horses, it's great when they're healed and they seem to be managing it well on their own. You know, the young horses, I feel like when I'm dealing with the 5, 6, 7-year-olds that have got a couple of spots, most of the time seeing some more frequent odontoplasty with strategic and purposeful odontoplasty of areas, we can get those to resolve and not worry about them for a decade or so. So certainly the younger horses, we've got a better chance of more long-term or longer-term resolution than the older horses. But we can certainly get the older horses more comfortable to the point where it's not as a painful disease. It's just more of a note on the dental chart that there's gaps, there's some feed trapping, but it's minimal and there's no bleeding.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. Are there any unanswered questions about this disease that we still need to learn, or are there any emerging areas of research that you would like to highlight?
You know, we're still looking. I would love for there to be some sort of medicant that hardens a bit more, but still dissolves in time. That is my dream periaceutical that, you know, maybe doesn't cost a fortune. I'd love to see something like that develop so that we could, instead of crushing metronidazole tablets and packing them in, we could have a more readily available medicant or periaceutical for these horses. Because a lot of the small animal stuff, it's really cost prohibitive to owners. And for as painful as these horses can be, you want to do something for them. I don't know that, you know, just rinsing their mouths with chlorhexidine, I don't think really does enough with a big dose syringe. But having something that can at least temporarily provide a medication and also a physical barrier to protect those diastemas that are bleeding and painful would make a big difference. And I still always joke that I'm going to create equiflossers for horses. So we need horses to develop thumbs and floss themselves. Would be a fantastic addition, but I'm sure we're a long way off from that.
Yeah, that would be great. Before I wrap up today, is there anything else you'd like to add about periodontal disease?
I think we've pretty thoroughly covered it. It is just incredibly common. And I always tell people that you should know that, you know, 40 to 80% of horses have periodontal disease. So if you've owned 10 horses and the person taking care of your horse's dental health hasn't mentioned periodontal disease before, you should either buy a lottery ticket or start that conversation with your dental provider and veterinarian that, you know, surely I have some degree of periodontal disease. How are we treating it? Are we just ignoring it and floating over it? Because that's really not the best way. I have owners that they notice dramatic differences in their horses by getting them treated and relieving the pain and inflammation associated with periodontal disease. So just glazing over it is not the way to go about it. It really is something that can be satisfying, albeit quite messy and smelly, but satisfying to treat.
Yeah, that's a great point. It does seem like maybe it is a little bit underdiagnosed sometimes. I feel like you don't hear 40 to 80% of horse owners say that their horse has periodontal disease.
No, it's definitely lower on the list.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rainbow, for coming on and sharing your knowledge about this with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
I would like to say thank you again to Dr. Rainbow for joining us, and thank you to Bimita for supporting this episode. And as always, thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Disease Du Jour. If you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please email me at csisson@equinenetwork.com.